All right, so get this, we're going deep on this crazy case. The sale of Revlon back in the 80s.
Oh, yeah, this one's a classic.
It's a total nail biter, right?
Yep.
But it's not just about the sale itself. This thing set a legal precedent that still has people in boardrooms sweating bullets even today.
Oh, absolutely. It's like the case that keeps on giving.
Exactly. And we've got the goods too, excerpts straight from the Delaware Supreme Court ruling. Revlon Inc. via McCanders and Forbes Holdings Inc.
Ooh, juicy.
Right, we're talking high stakes negotiations, defensive maneuvers, and a boardwalk in this tightrope between protecting the company and making sure shareholders get top dollar.
Yeah, you know what's wild is how this case really like spelled out the board's duties during a sale.
Right, because you'd think their job's always to protect the company, right?
Exactly, but the court was like, nope, once a sale is in the cards, their priority flips.
Like a switch.
Totally. Suddenly, it's all about getting the highest price, even if it means taking risks, and that sent shockwaves through the corporate world.
So set the stage for us. Who are the players in this corporate showdown and what were their opening moves?
Okay, so picture it. 1985, Ronald Perelman, head honcho at Pantry Pride. He wants Revlon.
Bold move.
Right, he makes an offer, but Revlon's CEO, Michel Bergerac, sees him as this classic corporate raider,
The villain.
pretty much,
Yeah.
and he thinks the offer's way too low.
So what happens? Revlon doesn't just roll over, right?
No way Revlon's board pulls out the big guns.
Like what? Lay it on us.
First up, the poison pill, officially the note purchase rights plan.
Okay, break that down for me.
Basically, it makes it a total nightmare for Pantry Pride to get a controlling stake in Revlon.
So it's like a defense mechanism.
Yeah, like a moat and alligators around the castle.
I like that. And that wasn't all right.
Nope. They also counteroffered to buy back some of their own shares.
Making themselves a less tasty target.
Exactly. They were playing hardball.
But Perelman wasn't backing down, was he? This is high-stakes corporate warfare we're talking.
Oh, he was relentless. Pantry Pride just kept coming back with higher bids.
So it was a bidding war.
Full-blown, and at that point, it was clear a sale was basically a done deal.
And that's where this whole shift in the board's duty kicks in,
You
right?
got it. The court was like, okay, sales on the horizon. Now the Revlon board's main gig is getting the highest price for shareholders.
So they went from protecting the castle to being like high-end auctioneers.
Exactly, trying to squeeze every last penny out of the deal.
So things are heating up. Who else jumps into this corporate brawl besides Pantry Pride?
Cue the dramatic music. Enter Forstmann Little & Co., another company with its eyes on the prize.
Ooh, another contender.
And they managed to strike a deal with Revlon that included this thing called a lockup option.
Okay, what's a lockup option in this context?
It's basically like dibs on certain Revlon assets at a set price if anyone else tries to muscle in.
So they were trying to lock down the deal.
Oh, yeah. They also got a no-shop provision, meaning Revlon couldn't even entertain other offers.
Wow, talk about playing hardball.
And to top it off, a hefty cancellation fee if the deal went south.
So they were really serious about this.
You bet. But all this maneuvering didn't exactly sit well with some of the other folks involved, like those note holders we mentioned before.
Right. Those guys weren't too happy, were they?
Not at all.
Well, we'll have to hear about why they were so upset after a quick break. Stay tuned. Okay, so we're back. And man, this whole Revlon thing has me thinking about those corporate takeovers. Like, it's some kind of high-stakes chess match.
It really is like every move matters.
And remember those note holders? They were freaking out when that Forstmann deal was looking likely.
Oh, yeah, that was a whole other layer of drama.
So let's break it down. Why were they so upset about the sale?
Okay, so imagine this. A company issues debt, like those Revlon notes.
They're basically borrowing money, right?
Exactly. And they promise to pay it back with interest.
Makes sense.
Now, those debt holders, they get priority if the company goes belly up.
Oh, so they're first in line to get their money back.
You gotta. Shareholders are the owners, but they're kind of at the back of the line.
Like the economy section on a flight.
Pretty much. So in the Revlon case, those note holders saw the Forstmann deal coming with a leveraged buyout and a ton of new debt.
That's got to be scary for them.
Right. They knew Revlon would be swimming in debt, making it way riskier for them to get their money back.
So it wasn't that Forstmann was a bad guy. They were just worried about the financial reality.
Exactly. It's like adding a ton of weight to a ship. It's going to sink lower in the water.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
So those lawsuit threats were their way of saying, hey, don't forget about us.
Absolutely. They're like, hey, Revlon board, you can't just prioritize the shareholders and leave us holding the bag.
It's like a game of musical chairs, and they didn't want to be left standing.
Precisely. And it shows how different players with different goals can clash in these situations.
You know, I think a lot of people see these corporate battles as just about the money. But this Revlon case, It's got a real human element to it.
Oh, definitely. You've got these big personalities with their reputations on the line.
Like Ronald Perelman. He was relentless in his pursuit of Revlon.
Oh, yeah. He was a classic corporate raider.
Kind of a controversial figure.
Sure, he was aggressive, not afraid to shake things up.
But he also had a knack for spotting opportunities.
That's the thing with these guys. They can be ruthless, but they can also see value where others don't.
And on the other side, you've got Michelle Bergerac, the CEO of Revlon,
fighting
tooth and nail against Perelman.
He was like the defender of the realm.
What do you think drove him? Was it just business or something more?
I think for Bergerac, it was personal. He had built Revlon into this iconic brand.
It was his baby.
Exactly. And he saw Perelman's takeover as a direct attack on his legacy.
So it was about pride protecting what he had created.
I think so. And that probably fueled his resistance, even when it was clear a sale was likely.
It's like those epic rivalries you see in sports where it goes beyond just winning or losing.
Totally. It becomes about something bigger.
But let's not forget about those note holders. They weren't just faceless entities in this whole thing.
No, they were real people with real money at stake.
Right? They were playing their part in this corporate drama. But let's step back for a second and look at the legal arguments that were flying around. I mean, this thing went all the way to the Supreme Court.
Oh, yeah. It was a legal slugfest. Pantry pride. They argued that the Revlon board had basically betrayed the shareholders.
By choosing Forsman.
Right. They said the board was putting their own interests ahead of the company's owners.
So they were accusing the board of being self-serving.
Exactly. They pointed to those sweetheart deal terms like the lockup option, the no-shop agreement, and that big cancellation fee.
As evidence that the board was playing favorites.
Yep. They were like, hey, the board is rigging the game and the shareholders are losing out.
So what did the Revlon board say in their defense?
Well, they insisted they were acting in good faith, using their best judgment, when they went with Forsman.
So they weren't denying they had chosen Forsman. They just thought it was the best move overall.
That was their argument. They said they had weighed all the options and Forsman's offer just made the most sense for the company.
So they were trying to position themselves as the responsible adults in the room.
Exactly. Like, we made the tough choices, but they were the right choices for everyone involved.
But the court didn't buy it right.
Nope. The Delaware Supreme Court sided with Pantry Pride. They said the Revlon board had stepped over the line.
By favoring Forsman and the note holders.
Right. They basically said, when a company is up for sale, the board's main job is to get the best price for the shareholders, period.
So it was a major victory for shareholder rights.
Absolutely. And it's sent a clear message to boards everywhere, don't mess around with shareholder value.
It's a landmark decision, for sure. But before we get into its lasting impact, I want to dig a little deeper into those note holders and why their reaction was so crucial to this whole case. Man, this Revlon case is wild, right? It's like a corporate soap opera with all these twists and turns.
Total drama. And what's crazy is this one case from the 80s, it still has ripple effects today.
That's what blows my mind, right? We're talking about lipstick and nail polish, but the legal stuff, it's still shaping how companies get bought and sold.
It's a testament to how strong legal precedents can be.
So before we wrap this up, let's zoom out. What are the big takeaways from this whole Revlon saga? What should people remember?
Okay, well, first off, this case really puts a spotlight on the board's duty to shareholders, like it's their number one job.
Especially when a company's being sold right.
Exactly. It's like they're holding this precious thing and they got to make sure they get the best price for it.
So they can't just make decisions that benefit them personally or protect their own jobs.
Nope. The shareholders come first, and the Revlon case shows that courts will actually step in and hold boards accountable.
So it's a warning to board members everywhere. Don't mess this up.
Right. You got to act with integrity, put those shareholder interests front and center.
Makes sense. Mm. So fiduciary duty, that's a big one. What else?
Well, the Revlon case also shows how important it is to have a fair and transparent process when you're selling a company.
Like a level playing field for everyone who wants to buy it.
Exactly. Everyone gets the same information, no backroom deals, no funny business.
It's like a well-run auction, right? The highest bidder wins.
Exactly. And that's how you make sure the shareholders get the best possible outcome.
Plus, it keeps everyone honest.
Transparency is key.
Okay, so we've got fiduciary duty, transparency. What else should we take away from this whole thing?
One more thing. Having a solid plan in place, like a playbook for when a takeover bid comes in.
So don't just wing it when billions of dollars are at stake.
Right. You need a clear process, someone in charge, and a set of rules for evaluating those offers.
Like having a fire drill.
Yeah.
Right. You got to be prepared.
Exactly. And that's how you make sure things run smoothly and the company's interests are protected.
So basically, the Revlon case is a masterclass in good corporate governance.
That's a great way to put it.
It's not just about making money. It's about doing things the right way.
With integrity, transparency, and always putting those shareholders first.
Well, I think we've covered a lot of ground here. We've gone from lipstick to lawsuits, from boardrooms to courtrooms.
We've seen the drama, the legal battles, the financial maneuver.
And hopefully our listeners have a better understanding of how these corporate takeovers really work.
It's a fascinating world, even if it gets a little messy sometimes.
That's for sure. But hey, that's why we do these deep dives, right?
Absolutely. To uncover the stories behind the headlines and shed some light on how business really gets done.
So thanks for joining us for this deep dive into the Revlon case. We'll be back soon with another fascinating story from the world of business and finance.